Counsel, when you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Jacqueline Dakey, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Mr. Michael D. Harms. We are here to ask your honors to reevaluate and otherwise correct an incredibly and unsustainable dissolution decree out of Franklin County District Court, specifically asking you to find that the trial court erred in first awarding Nancy, the defendant, $30,000 in a retroactive temporary alimony. Secondly, ordering Mike, my client, to pay $800 a month in ongoing alimony. And three, in setting aside over $400,000 in marital debts. Speaking to the first,
why was the alimony excessive given the length of this marriage?
It was excessive given the length of this marriage, and in the sense that there were six factors set out by the court in the decree, the six factors that we find in 42365, and in that only one of those supported an actual award of alimony, and that is only the duration of the marriage. None of the other five factors did the court find, based on the evidence presented by the court, that it actually supports award of alimony. Now, we fully acknowledge and understand that the court can take into consideration lots of other factors, that 42365 is not an exhaustive list, but the court did not specifically find any other factors or considerations upon which it relied in its decree in order to find $800 a month for 10 more years in alimony as an award for Ms. Harms.
Did the court discuss the disparity in the parties' incomes?
They did not discuss the disparity in the parties' incomes, only the disparity in the parties' assets, most of which were inherited by my client within the 12 months preceding the divorce proceedings. So speaking to the alimony factor of ongoing alimony, the $800 a month for 10 years, the only factor, like I said, is that the duration of the marriage, that's the only one that works in favor of an award of alimony. Further, there was no evidence presented to the court as to what would be a reasonable non-punitive amount of alimony. The only testimony that was elicited to that end was Mrs. Harms' rent was at the time of trial was $900 a month. Other than that, there was no other personal living expenses or a need for continued maintenance established in the trial court. Ms. Harms,
she also had some physical, I don't know if disabilities, but she had had an accident of some kind.
She had had an accident in the 5 to 6 years preceding the divorce, at which time, at the time of trial, you'll find in her testimony that she did not have any medical restrictions that prohibited her from her work as an RN, which she had been working for over 30 years at that time.
Was she still having some residuary pain and limitations as far as what she could do and what she couldn't do? It may not have affected her work, but did it otherwise affect her life, though?
I do not recall that testimony being in the trial court, no, Your Honor.
Hearing problems or memory loss or something like that?
No, Your Honor, I do not recall that testimony at trial. She may have, I am not sure. Her not being my client, I'm also not aware or have a relationship with her to that end to be aware of that, but I do not believe that it was established in evidence.
In the trial court's decree, the judge discusses that this case might have merited a grace award.
Yes, Your Honor.
But a grace award was not given, was it?
It was not given. The defendant's attorney did argue in closing argument as well as in throughout the case that a grace award would be something they were asking for, though this case can be distinguished from grace on pretty much every level in the sense that the parties were not involved in any sort of family farm corporation. They did not live or receive housing as a benefit of his employment. He wasn't employed throughout the duration of the marriage. He was self-employed, filing only a Schedule F for his farm income. The party's marital home was built on inherited land, but that was the only thing that could be even likened to similar circumstances as grace. So the trial court erroneously refers to or mentions or implies that a grace award would be applicable here when it simply isn't.
I'd like to go to the First Bank and Trust loans.
Yes.
Largely the farm business loan, and then I'd also like us to talk about the income tax liability. It looks like there's a loan for that one. Because it seems to me the bulk of your argument really focuses on whether or not those debts should have been, or he should have been given some credit for those debts. So
yes,
can you talk about the farm business loan? What evidence was there at the time that he inherited the land, how much that loan was versus at the time of the divorce?
Yes, so at the time that Mr. Harms inherited additional assets, you can see in our brief a chart of the party's net worth, as well as the a chart that separately allocates the liabilities that the parties had as a part of their marriage, joint debts that they had. Mm-hmm. You will see that after he inherited land and cash after his mother's death within the year, the last year of the party's marriage, that their net worth increased significantly because he paid off about $300,000 in farm debts. The continuing debts that are referenced and we believe should not have been set aside by the trial court total over $400,000. And those are with regard to those First Bank and Trust notes that still existed at the time. Those are for various farm equipment notes. They're for property taxes. They're the general operating note of a farm.
But you I think you acknowledge in your brief that that's like for seed and fertilizer.
Correct.
And so it's also forward planning.
Yes,
types of items.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is for those are related to the farm, and that's why the trial court justifies setting them outside of the marriage. But the income that was generated off all of that was used to the benefit of both parties.
Is that loan then, that $279,000, was that all acquired in that 1 year, or was that a carryover from past years? That's what I'm trying to get
yes,
to.
Your Honor.
What was that number
yes,
as
Your
of
Honor.
March of 2015? Is that
yep.
Where can we find that in the record?
We could find that number in exhibits. I can't recall the exact one, but it's exhibits 12 through 15 and exhibit 20. That encompasses all the First Bank and Trust notes, and it shows the balances and how they were rolled forward from previous notes or regrouped after Mr. Harms went to the bank every year to re-up his operating
Would
note.
You agree that some part of that $279,000 then might be more forward investment versus what was existing at the time they were still living together?
The parties separated, and Ms. Harms moved to Lincoln in April of 2016. But Mr. Harms continued to support her through the end of 2016 by paying all of her living expenses.
Yeah, but you're trying to recover some of that, so you can't have it both ways.
Exactly, but the trial court excluded it on both sides.
Yeah.
So one or the other's got to give, and that's what we're essentially asking here. And in the sense that she was benefiting from that income, she did not have any liability, income tax, property tax, or even the seed in the ground.
How did she benefit from the 2016 income, aside from those expenses that he paid? Because the question I was going to ask you when you talk about that, the trial court considered that temporary alimony, right?
Yes.
And he's saying, look, I paid for those costs. I expected to be reimbursed. What about the costs he paid for himself? What about the expenses he paid? Where do we see those in your, joint property exhibit?
So essentially the joint property exhibit, that $279,000 figure, the $9,000 figure, and the $124,000 figure, all three of those figures that the trial court set aside were as of the date of the end of December 2016. They weren't at the time of trial. So they would only be the ones who Ms. Harms was able to benefit from with regard to the production of the farm income, which is considered.
But so did he.
Correct. But marital income is considered a marital asset.
Yes.
Income that's produced by either party during the course of the marriage is considered a marital asset. And in Mines v. Mines, the Supreme Court has held that any debt that is necessary for producing that marital income to which both parties benefit is a marital debt. Even if the underlying property, even if the underlying asset, i.e. farm ground that he inherited, isn't itself a marital asset.
So you would agree that if credit was given for the debt that it took to operate the farm and produce the income in 2016, if
yes.
he was given credit for that, then he would have to let go of the argument regarding the temporary situation.
Definitely, Your Honor. I think that that's consistent with the law, and I think that that's consistent with the actual ledgers or estate value balances if we get down to brass tacks with regard to this couple's marriage and their circumstances. I do want to briefly touch on the fact that the award of retroactive temporary alimony flies directly in the face of Nebraska statutes requiring in 42.357 that no such order for temporary support of or maintenance in dissolution actions shall be entered before 3 days notice and hearing have occurred. Ms. Harms never filed an answer in this case. She never filed for temporary orders. She never pled that she would like temporary support or alimony and she never pled anything if we get down to it. But given that factor, the retroactive temporary alimony, treating that $30,000 as that is completely just kind of against the tenets of notice pleading and against kind of the statute that specifically outlines the formula or the process for which a party can get temporary alimony.
Yeah, it's it's a good thing when parties can work together and agree on how they're going to continue covering expenses for each other, right? He was covering his own also.
That's correct.
As well as covering hers, so it's sort of like it's still a marital bank account.
Correct.
Right?
That's how they were treating it. That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, but so then to come into court and say, now I want credit for that, seems like it goes against the better policy of letting people work that out.
Yes, Your Honor, and essentially he's being punished for working that out because it's now being counted against him twice. She's not on the hook for any of the debts that it took.
Yeah, I understand that argument.
To produce that income, but she's still getting the benefit of marital income despite being separated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Jeff Enns. On behalf of the firm Liske, Liske, Enns in Minden, I represent the appellee, Nancy Harms. Kind of in breaking down the main gist of the argument with regard to the debt that the appellant is claiming is marital. If you take a snapshot, the appellant, Mr. Harms, inherited $2 million of property in March of 2015. At that time, the only two outstanding debts that they had were the home mortgage, which was $172,000, and that is what the court valued it at, the date, the amount that it was on the date that he inherited the property. At the time of trial, it was $126,000, and at the date of separation, as Ms. Dakey referred to, it was $155,000. So any income that he inherited from any income that he derived from that inherited property is not considered in the reduction of those debts that existed prior to him.
How can we, in the record, or is it the exhibits that opposing counsel referred to that will show us what amount of debt existed at the time of the inheritance?
I put together a handy chart in my brief that sets out the note numbers, when those were taken out, the balance, the initial date they were taken out, the balance as of March 15, when he inherited the property, the balance on the date of separation, and then the balance at the date of trial. What the appellant is asking for is, at the balance of the date of separation on one of the notes that the judge excluded as non-marital on the date of separation was $182,000. The appellant is asking for the balance at the date of trial after a year of separation, or longer than that, of almost $280,000.
So that's the one you say was 180 at time of separation?
182 at the time of separation. However, what had happened is this guy inherits $2 million of land, takes out a huge operating loan, uses the operating loan to run the farming operation. The appellant testified to court that, yes, I took the income from that and primarily used that to pay off the debt that was incurred as a result of running the farm. So this is kind of a circular argument that I want to get credit for the full amount when they're at their highest amount of these farm loans. I don't want Nancy to get any credit for the income that was derived therefrom. With the $30,000 that was paid in support, obviously there was no agreement. He just did that. That's great. But then to come back after the fact, you ask yourself, how do we qualify this? And certainly our position is that it was not an abuse of discretion for the court to look at that and say, this was to support her, it was used in that fashion, I'm going to call it.
How do you respond to the argument, though, that temporary alimony was never sought?
I don't see why temporary alimony would be sought if temporary alimony is being paid. She was having her expenses paid, so why go rushing into court to ruin a good thing? And it promotes the parties getting along and peace and harmony in the dissolution process. So the appellant testified that he did not buy, there was no marital property purchased with the income from the running of the inherited farm. You look at that, it is a closed system as far as Ms. Harms is concerned. So it seems kind of, basically what the argument is, you benefited from this income, $30,000 even, so I want you to be responsible for half of $400,000 debt. That is the debt that is associated with running that inherited farm. The math is head spinning. That doesn't work.
But would you agree she would have some, at least a partial liability to the tax against the income earned that year, since she was the beneficiary of at least $30,000?
For the $30,000, if that's alimony, he technically would be able to deduct that from his income, and she should claim that as income on her taxes. If it were an alimony award, that's how it would be handled. So I will concede that there is some tax benefit that my client derived from that. I would, however, submit that regardless of what that is, it likely doesn't move the numbers so far that the property division award isn't in the realm of very equitable.
Help me out here, though. So with regard to, and it's I-2, the first bank and trust account that Mr. Harm says was the $279,300, and I think you told me that at the time of separation it was $182,000.
Right, I think.
So why would she not be, why should not at least that portion be considered a marital debt?
The $182,000. I mean, that was, it doesn't change the nature of what that debt was taken out for. It was, in fact, to run the inherited property. If you look at there, I mean, if she's not getting credit for a significant amount of income, if you put the debt at that amount, I haven't done the math, but give her credit for the income, my guess is probably that you're going to come up with a number. When I'm talking about the strictly the income numbers from the profit and loss from farming, my guess is that you're going to come up with a number that also is relatively close to what the court ordered as an equalization payment.
Were there different dates of valuation used for assets and liabilities?
The liabilities, as far as I can tell, on that the court used. They used the value of the home, the loan on the home, which is $172,402 at the time that Mr. Harms inherited his mother's property.
That was March of 15, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there was an additional farm loan from their general operating account for when he was a sharecropper that was at about $21,000. So, you know, it's a big jump when we're talking about. Mr. Harms admitted at trial that, no, the reason I made so much money and the reason I took out so much of the loan was because I was running, it was for running that inherited property.
And why was 12/31/16 used for the other loans under I?
That is not, that would be the appellant's argument, I believe.
What was your position on that?
My position was that that the debts, as they were valued at the time he inherited the property, that's when it should be cut off, because if then farm income from the inherited property is used to pay those down, then there's an argument that he should be paid back for that, and I, that would be probably an argument that could be made. So basically, let's stop the calculator from running at the time that he inherits this $2 million property, because it wasn't but a year later that she was kicked out of the house. The nature of farm income is that it's not incurred. It would be incurred in that 2016 year, about the time when, as is shown on the his income tax return for 2016, in the year that she was asked to leave.
But he farmed before receiving the inherited property, right?
Yes.
And so did he have farm debt prior to receiving the inherited property?
That was the $21,000.
That's just the 21? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that would be the note number 34686.
That's I number one on the property statement, I take it?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Would you agree the district court awarded your client items A42 and one of A6, one of the mattresses, but A42 is the new furniture she bought when she moved out, and that was valued by your client at $5,000. The judge put the total value for the section A as $200. Would you agree that was an error?
I don't know where the $200 came from. What I had gleaned from the order was that that $5,000 was essentially, that was a part of her alimony, so since you used alimony to purchase new furniture, I'm not going to consider that. The $200 might have been the discrepancy in the...
You don't need to explain the $200. I was more interested in why the $5,000 just dropped
right
off.
Right, and so I think that's within the court's discretion to say, otherwise it would have been $25,000 in alimony, and that would have been considered proper, but the court determined that $30,000 was a reasonable amount of retroactive alimony. I'll yield the I've got 2 seconds left, so thank you.
Thank you very much. The appellant is out of time as well. Thank you, Ms. Dakey and Mr. Enns. Your case is submitted, and you are excused. Next case.